Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. What should the city of Columbus and or Franklin County do, if anything, to save the Columbus Blue Jackets? Local media, the other paper, Columbus Business First, and the Dispatch have bandied about a variety of ideas recently, and apparently, if nothing is decided before the end of next season, the Jackets are out of here. A decade after the puck first dropped in Nationwide Arena, joining us later will be OSU Emeritus Professor of Finance Stephen Buser, whom the Columbus Chamber of Commerce commissioned last year to present various options for retaining the Blue Jackets in Columbus and continuing that economic development growth in the Arena District. But right now, Jeff Bell of Columbus Business First is with us to talk about the latest news. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Oh, thanks for having me, Ann.
Before we get started, I want to invite our listeners, if you have an idea about how to retain the Blue Jackets, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you don't think they should be here, maybe we'll talk about that a little later in the program, but right now we're looking for ideas on how to keep them. Jeff, when did these financial storm clouds first gather over the Blue Jackets? It feels like the day they dropped that first puck.
Well, in part, that's true, but they really picked up after they lost the entire 04-05 season, when there was the labor dispute between the Players Association and the league, and it's been, you know, pretty much downhill, steady financial losses for the team since then, and the Blue Jackets really started bringing this to light in around April of 2009, when they qualified for the NHL playoffs for the first time ever. And at that point, Mike Priest, the team's president, he did an interview with me in Business First, and he said that, you know, the problem they saw it as two-pronged. One was that the team's poor performance on the ice had resulted in declining attendance, which is, you know, the NHL is very heavily dependent on ticket sales for their for team revenue. So and they thought that at that point they were on the right path toward turning around the on-ice performance and winning back some of their fan base that they'd steadily lost since their, like, the first or second season, when they had had sellouts on a regular basis. And then the other component was improving their lease situation with Nationwide. And then, you know, since then, there's been a number of proposals offered. I think it was in around Memorial Day in 2009, when word leaked out that there was an effort at the State House to allow Franklin County to raise taxes on alcoholic beverage sales in order to subsidize a purchase by the county of Nationwide Arena, mm-hmm. So they would, you know, take it from being a privately owned arena. By Nationwide has a 90% stake, and the Dispatch Printing Company has a 10% stake. And so, the additional money from the so-called sin taxes would be used to retire the debt on bonds that the county would issue in order to pay for the arena purchase.
Jeff Bell, why is it that the entity that holds the most stake in the Columbus Blue Jackets also works the lease deal with itself at something like Nationwide? Why can't it work out a better lease deal with itself? That's a question I get from a lot of people. Why are they doing that to themselves? Stop it.
Well, that's a good question. And I, from every time I've talked with people at Nationwide about this issue, they've indicated that they're open to just about anything to try to make this lease agreement work with the Blue Jackets, and that includes Nationwide has deferred the team's rent payments for each of the past two seasons. And, you know, we keep hearing from people in the business community that Nationwide is willing to sell the arena at a greatly discounted price in order to, you know, they would sell it at a discounted price to a public entity, mm-hmm. either the county or the city or the Franklin County Convention Facilities Authority, in order to protect their investment in the arena district. And also they are willing to, I think they're willing to start paying for naming rights to the arena in the event that they do sell it to a public entity. And maybe we've heard that they maybe even would take some of the money that they would earn from the sale, mm-hmm. and reinvest it in the team to help recapitalize the Blue Jackets.
voters in the past have said they don't want to publicly finance the Columbus Blue Jackets. They don't want to do it for any professional athletic team. What's the sense out there now about what the public would be willing to do?
Well, when they proposed raising the taxes on alcoholic beverage sales, there was a, you know, there was a real firestorm of protest, public protest. In fact, I mean, we broke the story initially on a Thursday mm-hmm. on the on our webpage, and by Tuesday, the county commissioners had said that they weren't interested in pursuing it because of and there was such a public outcry in all different forms of media. So, but at the same time, there's been a group of fans and arena district business operators that have formed a group. I think it's Move Forward. Yeah, Move Forward Columbus. Mm-hmm. That they've been advocating for some sort of solution to make sure the Blue Jackets stay in Columbus. So you know, my guess is sentiments are split.
The Columbus model of funding a team is sort of a throwback. Most NHL teams enjoy some fiscal security and public-private partnerships, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. I was wondering if you've talked to the folks who made the initial investments and whether they wonder that they shouldn't have seen this coming in the first place.
Well,
they're pretty smart people.
Yeah, they are smart people, and John McConnell made this investment, I think, primarily. I'm sure when he made the commitment to pay $80 million for a franchise fee and all the startup costs here, I don't think he ever saw it as a big profit-making venture for him and his family. I think a lot of it he did kind of is a way to support Columbus and, you know, make us a major league city, for lack of a better term. So I don't think they ever thought that they were going to make a lot of money. Mike Priest has told me that their original business model was if they could make the playoffs every year, you know, maybe advance a round or two in the playoffs, that they would stand a good chance of breaking even or making a small profit. But, you know, that's only happened one time in the nine seasons they played, so that model went out the window. And I think they've also had more difficulty in managing the arena than what they maybe had anticipated in terms of getting concerts and shows in here compare, you know, because they compete with the Schottenstein Center, that type of thing. So my guess is that they always thought that this was a business model that was going to struggle, but maybe not to the extent that it has.
There is now talk, and you wrote about it first this past week, about using casino tax revenue coming in 2010-2013 for the county or some public or quasi-public entity to purchase the arena.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, the city of Columbus, because the way the constitutional amendment allowing casinos in Ohio is written, is going to get a pretty large influx of casino tax revenue on an annual basis. I think the casino proponents, they told me that their estimates were that in 2013, which would be the first full year for the collection of the casino tax, Columbus would get about $20 million, and Franklin County would get $16 million. And then those, the estimates are that number will steadily increase as these casinos, you know, get more customers, that type thing. So so there's good, and there's no restrictions on how those dollars can be spent. So it's being floated out there and discussed pretty seriously from what we can gather that some of that money could be used to finance a public purchase of the arena.
Now, this is something that voters have said they don't want to do, and there are no restrictions on this money, but, of course, there are the restrictions at the ballot box, in so much as mm-hmm. people might not reelect the public officials that support such a plan.
Yeah.
We wanted to talk to public officials about this, but no one from the city or the county would join us on the show tonight, mm-hmm. show today.
Yeah.
So no takers there. But what when they talk about all these discussions going on, what do they mean? They're in another meeting right now. They're not all sitting around constantly talking about it, or what's going on? How does this proceed?
Well, you mentioned the politics of it. That's probably what's held up some sort of a solution. I mean, for the county to get involved, two out of the three county commissioners would have to sign off on this. And Commissioner Marilyn Brown, she's up for re-election in November. And then Commissioner Paula Brooks, she's running for Congress. So my guess is that they don't want to touch a politically sensitive issue that, you know, could cause campaign problems for them. And on the city side, four of the city council members are up for re-election next year. And so if the city would commit casino funds to this, they're going to have to, you know, explain why when they run for election next year. So on that end, you know, this whole process definitely has some big political hurdles to get over. But, you know, at the same time, since the casino funds, that would be up to the discretion of city council and or the county commissioners. And since those funds have already been voted on in a statewide vote, I suppose they could try to sell it as, you know, all the public's already spoken on this issue. And so they wouldn't need to go to the ballot to get approval for using X amount of the casino revenue that the city and county is going to get.
What kind of timeline are we on right now? When will the Blue Jackets exit if nothing is done to change their circumstances?
Well, they've never actually, to their credit, have never threatened to leave. I think it's been sort of implied, and Mike Priest told me that they can't keep losing $10 to $12 million forever. John P. McConnell's, you know, financially can't make that kind of commitment. But at the same time, in our recent conversation, Mike said that he hoped some sort of a solution could be reached by the end of the coming season, which would be, you know, April of next year.
Well, good Lord willing, at the end of the playoffs, right?
Well, if they make the playoffs, yeah, that certainly would make this an easier sell to the community. You know, that's part of it. I mean, I think some people are saying, you know, why would we use public funding when the Blue Jackets have struggled so mightily on the ice? And
and that's a good question, and we're going to get back to that, because it's more than just about winning a game, apparently. It's a lot about economic development. Well, we'll talk about that. Jeff, you're going to stay with us for the next segment?
Yes.
Great. Jeff Bell of Business First, Columbus Business First, will return with us, along with Stephen Buser, OSU Finance Professor Emeritus. He studied the issue of economic development in the Arena District, and he'll be able to help us out with that a little bit as well. If you have an idea yourself for keeping the Blue Jackets in town, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Put your comments or questions there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Get the stories behind the headlines every day on All Things Considered.
Currently, there are no PHEVs or plug-in electric vehicles on the road today.
General Motors plans to start selling the Chevy Volt, a plug-in electric vehicle, later this year. OSU Center for Automotive Research plans to install 6 stations on Kinnear Road in the fall.
On your drive home, listen to award-winning coverage from the WOSU News Team on WOSU 89.7 FM.
And you're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. 76 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20 this morning. Clouds this morning, sunshine in the afternoon, and a slight chance of rain. A humid day today with a high of 85.
Support for WOSU comes from Thrifty Airport Valet Parking, a valet service for business and leisure travelers that takes you in your car to curbside check-in at Port Columbus, 614-237-5800 or thriftycolumbus.com.
All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now, OSU Professor of Finance, Stephen Buser. Professor Buser, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Last year, you prepared a report for the Columbus Chamber of Commerce on options for retaining the Blue Jackets and continuing the economic development in the Arena District.
Yes.
Had you ever been interested in the Blue Jackets before that?
Not at all.
So,
I'm embarrassed to say.
You're not emotionally involved in this.
I'm not emotionally involved, no.
What, I guess the bottom line is, what has the economic impact been since the Blue Jackets opened shop in Columbus 10 years ago?
Well, and that's below the headlines, is the fact that there's just been truly remarkable economic development that couldn't have been contemplated at the time. I go back to when the Arena District was an abandoned penitentiary, and the options were maybe we can make it into a new penitentiary, fix it up, and get criminals back in there.
A museum.
put COSI there. I mean, we were scratching our heads trying to come up with something that would be trivial in relation to what we've got. And hidden behind all this is spectacular success stories that other cities, not just in this country but in Canada with hockey teams, are looking at Columbus, and if you're from Canada, you're really disgusted to think
you never look south,
and they come down here just hoping that they're going to find something they don't like, and they go back disgusted that they really, really like what we've got here in Columbus.
Some folks say that it started with the arena itself, that it was so fabulous and so well conceived that it sort of set the mark very high.
And that could be. I don't know why it happened or how it happened. If you'd ask me at the time, mm-hmm. could it happen? I would say absolutely not. This is a pipe dream beyond anything that's reasonable. But it's happened. So we're not talking about economic development anymore. It's developed. It's still going on. In fact, I'm shocked. In the middle of a recession, you go by the Arena District and they're building stuff as if there's no recession. But it's a little magical place down there that has grown and developed and continues to develop. But it is also a moneymaker for the city of Columbus and the state of Ohio. And that's the part I was really looking at in my study.
There's the irony. It doesn't make money for the team that brought it here in the first place, that made it all happen in the first place, but it does for everybody else. How much money is it making for everybody else?
It is making a fortune. Now, we're talking about very conservative estimates, and a lot of the sales figures, for instance, were limited to only 10 businesses for which we had good, solid numbers. There are 170 businesses operating in that district. So for just 10 of the 170, we could identify tax revenues back in the year 2008 of $30 million, and that's ahead of schedule, headed toward $60 million in the year 2018.
And that's on top of tax increment financing plans, tax abatements, and that kind of thing.
Correct. This is the money that we're collecting, so that's true. We've had all kinds of rebates and special deals and so on. So despite all the efforts and the incentives that the city did provide to develop the land, because it didn't even have basic plumbing, basic facilities, so it had to invest in it a little bit. But it's just been spectacular, literally off the charts in terms of money. That's been pouring in because of the growth of the Arena District.
Jeff Bell, what are your sense? What is the sense in the journalism community about why the Arena District turned out to be such a success? What's
well,
the magic?
I think a lot of it is just the quality of the development and the mix there. Obviously, the arena is the cornerstone for it, but I mean the quality of the restaurants, the addition of Huntington Park, the baseball facility for the Clippers, some of the development that's popped up, on the fringes of the arena district. So I think it's mostly the quality and of what's there and the mix of restaurants, that type thing.
And Professor Buser, in your report, you're only looking at specifically the Arena District. There are other adjoining areas that have benefited as well.
Yes, and we call those induced effects or multiplier effects. That's really why local communities get in this economic development business. It has a target area, but then there's spillover benefits for the surrounding areas as well.
We're talking about the Columbus Blue Jackets and its impact on the Arena District. Didn't exist before the Blue Jackets existed, however, and it has the Arena District has flourished while the Jackets are struggling financially. If you have an idea to save the Blue Jackets, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests, Business First reporter Jeff Bell, and also OSU Finance Professor Emeritus Stephen Buser. And on with us on the line right now is Bill, and you're asking the eternal question, why? Why do we even talk about this?
Well, yeah, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. The big question I have is why the public should be asked to support a vanity project in a niche sport.
Okay.
This is not hockey country, and it's such a vanity project that the owner, McConnell, was one of those who led the charge to almost kill the league when his anti-union position shut down the league for a year. He hasn't brought in good management in all the years of their existence. The team has not won a single playoff game. And so now the people of Columbus are being asked to support this kind of project that was just for the vanity of the owner at the beginning.
That's a good question, Professor Buser. That's the eternal question for folks who are not into hockey. Why should they care, and why should they be asked to spend their tax dollars or the tax revenue that they generate with their investments on this?
And that's a great question, and I'm a non-hockey person, so my sympathies are completely with that of the caller. And I was also initially opposed. To quote the Jerry Maguire, show me the money. I mean, the only justification from my perspective is, are you making money? So you're investing public dollars. Are you getting back a return? Are you getting back more public dollars than you're putting in? And if it's even close, I wasn't in favor of it because there's something called substitution effects. I mean, some of this money we might have been coming into Columbus anyway. So I approached this project very skeptical and assuming, as most economists would, that this is probably not a good investment of public dollars. But I did a 180 after I looked at the numbers. And then I went around to other officials and said, please, if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. If my numbers are off, let me know. Last thing I want to do is trick other non-hockey fans into making a bad investment. So we had people kick the tires on the estimates, and nobody could come up with any issue there. So it looks like a solid financial investment.
Someone made a comparison to me that it's sort of like the convention center. They never go to conventions in downtown Columbus. They never go to a convention in downtown Columbus, you know, and yet they supported having a convention center in downtown Columbus. Is it like that?
Well, it's similar. I haven't done the math, so I don't know.
But
if the
conceptually?
Conceptually. If the convention center is making money, it was a good investment of public dollars. If we're getting back more money, if our taxes are lower or we're getting better services because of these types of investments, then I'm in favor of them. But I'm not telling people, suck it up, tighten your belt, and give some of your money out to hockey. That's not the approach I'm taking, and that's not what I've found. Instead, I found that if you invest a dollar today, you're getting back $4 or $5 in the future, and that's the NHL strategy in general. Other cities are trying to get these teams to make money. I mean, they may like hockey, but
for the city.
For the city, to make money for the city. Show me the money. The Jerry Maguire of the world is saying, show me the money. And they're convinced that they get a great rate of return off this investment, like the convention center.
Jeff Bell, what do other cities do? How do they survive?
Well, it's a mix. Columbus is the only NHL city, it's my understanding, where the arena is owned by a private entity that doesn't have an ownership stake in the team. There's some real good research done by a writer for the Hockey Writers. It's a Columbus attorney, Jeff Little, and he looked at this issue extensively. And he said of the remaining 29 arenas, 15 are owned by a public entity, and then another 14 are owned either directly or indirectly by the individuals or companies that actually own the NHL franchise. But those 14 arenas have received significant public money when they were built, and some of them have their arena operations subsidized by the by public entities. Professor Buser's report talked about Nashville, and boy, the Nashville Predators in the NHL, they don't pay any rent, and then the city actually gives them a couple of $1 million a year to manage the arena and practically guarantees that they make a profit off of it. Now I think that's to the extreme, in terms of public support. But and then that arena is also owned by county government in the Nashville area. But so it's my understanding that Columbus does have a unique ownership model with, you know, that with Nationwide being the owner of the arena.
We have an email now. If you'd like to email us, allsides@wosu.org, we'll get you there. Or you can call us, 614-292-8513, if you have an idea or a question. We have an email from a listener. And this sort of, I guess, gets back down to that issue of why. Why, if the Arena District is such a great success and making all this money, do they need a taxpayer bailout? It boils down to the fact these hockey freaks, that's in quotes, don't want to pay for their own fun. So we get back to the issue. If it's such a success, why is the team suffering like it is? Professor Bucer?
It's a success for all of the businesses in the surrounding area and a success for the tax receiving entities. Not a success for Nationwide, the owner of the arena. Nationwide is losing money and certainly not a success for the Blue Jackets. So we're looking at the star attractions that are losing money and it's the surrounding entities that are making money. So the person writing in hit the nail right on the head. Mm-hmm. That's what the other cities are looking at. If we can subsidize these teams to bring them to our city, then we will have businesses and local governments benefiting. And that's the reason there's this intense competition, like Nashville.
So if the city or the county or some combination thereof or something subsidizes to the tune of, let's say, arguably $12 million a year, but they're bringing in $60 million a year eventually in tax revenue, that's the payoff.
You bet. Five for one. And I'd prefer the word investment to subsidy because I would not vote for subsidy. I would not support subsidy.
It's kind of that question with the passenger rail issue, too.
Yes.
The pros, okay, it's called an investment. The people opposed to it call it a subsidy.
But with one big difference, and that is we already have the blue. If you'd told me about it, I would have said no, the investment wouldn't be there. But now it's there. I mean, we see what we have, so it's very different. The passenger rail is still speculative.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that turns it. But suppose we have a passenger rail system that's generating $5 for every dollar that the public puts in. They're making $4 off of that. So it's not a subsidy. It's a phenomenal investment return. And so that's a very different decision from my perspective.
We have an email from Sarah. Maybe this, Jeff, you can answer this question. She asks, why don't we just put it on the ballot and vote? That is what we do for everything else when it comes to tax dollars. Let's clog up the ballot. I don't know if she's being facetious or not, Jeff, but you talked earlier about the fact that the money isn't the tax revenue they're talking about channeling in the direction of the Blue Jackets isn't earmarked. So they don't have to go to the ballot.
Right, they don't have to. So, Columbus City Council, Mayor Coleman, and the county commissioners, I mean, they're just going to have to weigh the political ramifications of doing this without a vote of the people, if that's the course that they choose. I'm guessing it's a pretty tough political call, but I think they recognize that they have to do something to try to help the Blue Jackets shore up this lease situation. One of the points I did want to make is that, this threat, I hear people saying, well, the Blue Jackets are going to leave Columbus if they don't, get some kind of public support for the arena. And they're going to have a real hard time doing that. I mean, geez, the franchise in Phoenix was bankrupt. They had an owner that was willing to pay twice what anybody else was willing to pay, but he wanted to move them to Hamilton, Ontario, and the NHL stepped in and blocked that transfer because they didn't want to lose that market. And, Nashville and Pittsburgh have been through similar situations in the past 5 or 6 years, and they were able, they talked about moving, and then Pittsburgh was able to get a new arena, and Nashville was able to get a lot of rent concessions, and so they stayed. But, when Ken Hitchcock was still the coach of the Blue Jackets mm-hmm. back last December, he told me that, I asked him this question, do you think the Blue Jackets are going to leave? And he said no, that his, long experience in NHL, he's practically every city he's been in, there's been lease problems, and they always get resolved. So my guess is they'll figure out something. But back to your original question, it's going to just be a political question that the city hall and the county commissioners are going to have to answer.
We have a caller now. David, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
I was wondering if the ownership of the franchise is not strong enough to afford it, and if the benefits that the franchise creates are so strong for the community, why don't the franchise owners consider selling the franchise to the public along the lines of the Columbus Clippers?
Anybody want to?
Well, that was one of the options that I had discussed. And I think an intermediate option is the arena. The franchise, actually, I don't want to get too bogged down in the economics but or the numbers, but the on the hockey operations, they receive a substantial subsidy from the NHL. So if they didn't, if the Blue Jackets did not have to manage the arena and pay to be in the arena, a good chunk of their financial problems would go away. So I'm not sure that you'd actually have to transfer ownership of the Blue Jackets to save them, but you do have to solve the arena problem.
Well, why don't we do both, Professor?
Well, I think if we do one, we will solve the other one. Obviously, if there are people that want to bid on the arena, bid on the Blue Jackets, I'm sure that the Blue Jackets ownership would consider that as well. So I'm not saying there's anything wrong with both, but I think they would gladly take one.
So, David, you think government could do a better job of operating the Blue Jackets then?
Well, it's not that I think we can do it more profitably, mm-hmm. but to the extent that the franchise owners are crying the blues because they're losing money because of the lease situation, and they're asking the public to be bailed out with public funds, I don't see why the public should be stuck subsidizing a piece of real estate and not have an opportunity to purchase the franchise and do a clean deal that supposedly benefits the community so well and has been costing the franchise owners so much money. When I have a building that's losing me money, I'm interested in selling it. And if I have a franchise that's losing me money, I don't understand why the franchise owners wouldn't want to sell it unless they would be making a lot more money if they were bailed out just on the arena.
All righty. David, thank you for your call.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to be negative with respect to selling the franchise itself. I do think the franchise will continue to lose at least a little money. So if the city or county were to buy both the arena and the franchise, I think there would be even more dollars having to come in. And so I thought that would raise the bar for public involvement. But if it lowers the bar, then I certainly don't object to that.
We have to take another break, and we also have to say goodbye to Jeff Bell, Business First reporter. He's on deadline today, and thank you for your time today as well, Jeff.
Oh, my pleasure.
Take care, and we'll be back with Professor Bucer from OSU to talk about more about what he proposed in his report to the Columbus Chamber of Commerce last November. We have calls coming in. We have emails to read. So if you'd like to join the party, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to Facebook. Facebook's lonely today. All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. We'll be right back on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Developed by WOSU Public Media and the Columbus Metropolitan Library, ColumbusNeighborhoods.org features over 30 neighborhoods in and around Columbus and allows users to tell their own stories, post their own photos and video, and contribute to the collective story of Columbus. To be a part of this multimedia public engagement project or to learn more, visit ColumbusNeighborhoods.org.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of the program will be here, and we'll hear about trauma and violence in the lives of young black men. And we'll hear about preventing youth violence through street intervention and community involvement. That discussion begins at 11 o'clock.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
77 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40 this morning. Clouds this morning, sunshine peeking through the clouds this afternoon, and a chance of rain, maybe a thunderstorm. A humid day today with a high of 85. Clouds tonight with a good chance of rain and a muggy night, a low of 72. Showers and thunderstorms for Wednesday and another humid day, a high of 82 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the Columbus Blue Jackets. In about a year, if they don't figure something out, something's going to happen. Now, apparently, it's unlikely that they'll leave, but, you know, heaven only knows. We want to hear from you if you have an idea. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu like Deborah did. She writes, I did not have the chance to vote on the alcohol tax, etc. I'd be willing to pay a few extra cents for my beer to continue the Arena District Blue Jackets, but the county commissioner shot it down under pressure from Anheuser-Busch. The very businesses that are raking in the dollars are fighting it. It's not a question of whether we are fans of hockey. It's are we fans of Columbus and of the Arena District? We elect our commissioners to address thorny issues, and they are sitting on their hands while expecting a private family to continue to support the city by shelling out its own money. I don't call that a vanity project. I call it civic charity. So there is a question about, you know, what the public officials are doing, and they're talking a lot. And you've talked with them, Professor Buser.
I have, and one of the hidden stories in all this is that, and from my perspective at least, they were behaving very responsibly, keeping an open mind, very serious about the protection of public dollars. So we've heard discussions from several people who have indicated that they shouldn't be doing it at all. So they haven't rushed into doing this. But then we've also heard of from this last person, they want to take a perspective. Is this in the best interest of their city and county? And they are making a deliberate decision on that. So I guess I don't want to – I can't say I can know everything that's going on, but the piece that I saw, they were behaving very responsibly and trying to come to a well-reasoned and appropriate decision on behalf of the city and county.
We have another email from Carl. Wants to know, what do the – it's a series of questions, but they all go to the same kind of issue. What do the Blue Jackets make their money on? Tickets, parking, food sold, clothing, souvenirs, et cetera. What are the team's expenses? Do they have to pay rent? So we already know they have to pay rent, Carl. How much does the arena make? Don't they make money on concerts and other shows? So how does that work? We know that you've made a series of proposals, options, and one of them was to join forces with another venue out there. And indeed, the OSU Schottenstein Center has joined forces and is taking over control of the venue as a outside of the Blue Jackets issue. But where else do they make their money from?
Well, they don't make profits. They make revenues, but their costs exceed their revenues in almost every one of their areas. They sell tickets for hockey games, obviously, but they do not generate enough revenue from their hockey ticket sales to pay their player costs. They receive a subsidy from the NHL to fill in a good portion of that gap. Then the other problem is that, yes, they charge for other events, but very often they lose money on the other events. It's such intense competition, not just between Schottenstein and Nationwide Arena, but also between Columbus and Cincinnati and Cleveland to get the big, large events. There are not as many as there used to be, another big problem. And there's intense competition for the few that are there. So they cut such deals that unless they have super sales, they probably will lose money, not even cover the costs of an event. So that's the economics of large arenas has really turned south during the period that the Blue Jackets have been in town.
Was the decision by OSU to take control, or I think it's $1 million a year deal to take control of managing the venue, was that what you were talking about?
That was certainly one of the proposals on my list to coordinate the management of those two things. And that was in reaction to the fact that years ago we had many, many events, so you could have two viable arenas. That's no longer the case. So you have to coordinate. You can't compete as intensely as you used to because both venues were losing money on their events.
Tell about us about some of your other proposals, some of the other ideas you had.
Well, my favorite proposal, and this may be unrealistic politically, but my favorite proposal was to be creative in the financing of the arena. Other arenas have been financed with what we call revenue bonds or income bonds, where you go to prospective bondholders and say, well, we are going to raise money and we will pay you back, but not interest at a fixed rate. The interest we're going to pay will depend on things like tax revenue collections. So let's take these numbers. This idiot professor from Ohio State Bucer claims these revenues are going to grow to $60 million in 10 years. Well, let's map out that schedule. And if we don't make that list, then the coupons on the bond, the interest on the bonds won't be the stated amount. So it'll be scheduled or indexed. And if we do pretty well, then as a bondholder, you would do well. And I actually talked to some potential investors, including some hockey people, who said, I would love to take that bet, that I believe in the project, I believe in these estimates, and I would hold the bonds, and I will do better than I expect if the projections turn out to be better than this. So those types of opportunities. You can also get into public financing where you have a lower interest rate because it's exempt from federal taxes. There are other things. I don't want to bore you with too many details, but there were even some federal government subsidies for this type of program. I don't know if they're still open, but there was a window for those that would have been very attractive, where the federal government would have contributed to the overall effort. So if we'd been creative in the way we'd financed a public acquisition, I think we could have greatly reduced the cost and, more importantly, shifted an awful lot of the risk of ownership of the arena to public bondholders.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to speak with Professor Bucer, Professor Stephen Bucer of OSU, he prepared a report for the Columbus Chamber of Commerce last year about how to fix the Blue Jackets problem. And Ed, you're a hockey fan, and in fairness, I want you to be on the air. You disagree with the caller earlier who said, why should we support somebody's vanity hobby? You're on the air, Ed.
Yeah. When you think about it, a lot of these people that look at that as a vanity project are the same people that I think actually hold Columbus back. I really want to speak up for the visionaries. Those are the people that didn't want to move Cooper Stadium because, well, it's been there, even though it was falling apart and really couldn't afford to be rehabbed. They're the same people that said Columbus wouldn't take to soccer because it was an Ohio State football town. There's the same people that say nobody ever goes downtown, but they never come downtown to see what's going on downtown or in the Short North or in German Village. It's a constant whining attitude that we don't want to do this, we don't need to do that, and even if something does show that it can be successful, they're the first ones to go the yes but routine. And I think that in a lot of ways contributes to our cowtown image because we have that faction that is so vocal that it's always been this way and it's never going to work in the future. And they don't want something to succeed because it just takes away from their attitude that, gee, I like Columbus just the way it was.
You know, those 5,500 people that work down in the Arena District, Professor Bucer, do they all live down in the Arena District?
Not all, but a good portion of them, and they're fairly upscale. And the caller is absolutely right in terms of that visionary. And I just want to say that I'm one convert. So I started out with the very people he was criticizing. I thought certain they were right, but at least one of us has changed our minds. So I hope the caller takes a little pride in that.
Ed, have you grown up in Columbus, or did you move here?
Oh, I grew up in Columbus. I look at what we've done in Columbus, and our especially like our love of the automobile, and I get back to the visionary thing again. You know, nobody wants the rail. And then when you say, well, we're going to put bike lanes in, they say, well, we don't have enough people that ride bikes. I remember that conversation from one of your earlier shows. So
probably have it again.
Yep. And I see a lot of changes in Columbus, most of which I like. I wasn't originally in favor of moving the stadium. I thought it could be rehabbed until they started showing the numbers and, hey, we've done this twice already. We can't afford to do it a third time. And again, the pushback on that park that they want to put in the place of the stadium over there, and you've got all these people that say, well, it's going to do this, it's going to do that, it's going to do something else, and when somebody comes out with a study, they say, well, those are just your numbers, which is kind of the same thing they've done on almost every project that's been successful around Columbus. It's like, well, those can't be good numbers because they came from the people that are in favor of it, regardless of how neutral the people that put the figures together were.
Okay. Ed, thanks for your call. Thanks for listening.
Can I comment on that?
Sure.
I like the fact that Columbus has a tough standard. Again, I'm coming basically approaching this from the tough standard. You know, show me the money. Convince me. I want to be a hard sell. I don't want to lower the bar for the public works. And I love the fact that our public officials are taking their time, looking at this from all sides, and considering all the positive and negatives. And I particularly love that despite all that, then we do move forward. So I'm not as pessimistic, I guess, as the caller in that sense, that we don't say no absolutely. We're a tough sell. But then when we are sold, we move, and our track record seems to be pretty good for me.
Are you from Columbus?
I'm not from Columbus, but I've learned to respect Columbus an awful lot. So I like both sides. I like all sides now. I like the approach taken by Columbus.
Okay, I like how you said that. Let's take another call now from Mark. Mark, you disagree.
Indeed. First of all, a professional sports team is not a quality is not the sole factor for a quality
of life
for a good town. Yeah, mm-hmm. You've got other things like affordable housing, a solid mass transit system, which we really don't have, and a lot of other things. And secondly, any talk of a taxpayer bailout of the Blue Jackets should simply be taken completely off the table. We've seen enough shifting of private risk and financial loss to the taxpayer to last us a lifetime.
Like, can you give me an example of what you mean by that?
The bailout of the Wall Street Bank.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we don't need to see it on a local level. And I think we should concentrate on those other things which make for a good quality of life besides a professional sports team. It's been one of the biggest beefs I've had about Columbus since I moved here over 20 years ago.
Okay.
This insistence on having a professional sports team and everything will be great. I'll listen.
All right. Mark, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. We do, as I predicted, keep coming back to that same issue. Is it about a sports team or is it about a larger investment that could be any kind of investment? And in fact, you know, the bailout of the Wall Street hasn't been unprofitable for the federal government.
Well, and I like the analogy. Like the perspective, and I think that's right on the target. The fact that it puts you in an uncomfortable, difficult spot is precisely the point. These are not easy decisions, at least in my perspective. And I like the fact we approach it from a skeptical perspective. This is probably not a good idea until you show me the money. Mm-hmm. Now, I do think that once you show them the money and once all the politicians are saying, we can't find any problems with this strategy, then we move forward. So if all these politicians eventually move forward after 2 years of study on this and all the political risk to them, if they get it wrong, they're in big trouble. That's very different. The Wall Street bailout may have turned out okay, but that was a much different gamble. In the heat of the battle, we had to make some decisions literally over a weekend.
Right.
We didn't get 2 years to think this thing through. We didn't get lots of projections. We didn't get everybody weighing in. So this is a very different debate. I love this debate we're having. I love the intensity on both sides. And I love the fact that we've got politicians that are willing to listen to both sides and make up their mind. And we do end up moving forward. And I think Columbus is a pretty neat city, and the Arena District in particular, pretty neat.
We have some Facebook friends out there. Dina on Facebook says, big money wanted them here. Let big money bail them out. Liz on Facebook says, they need to win more. Okay. We have an email from Connie. Why doesn't the area do more family-friendly events, similar to some other things like outside carnivals, summer theater performers, and local markets? Bring some of the excitement that people travel to New York and Chicago and even Cincinnati, Ohio to enjoy. They need to send their planning committee to other cities and bring back some of these ideas. So how does, when you have something like a professional team like this, you said that other cities are looking at Columbus. It's not just at the team being here. It's what the developers have done with that.
Yes. It's the building around it. In a lot of cities, you have an arena kind of off by itself, a remote district where it's just a parking lot. And then after the team goes, it's not playing a home game.
Like
it's
Cooper
shut
Stadium.
Down. Like Cooper Stadium mm-hmm. was. And I loved Cooper Stadium for many years, but it was not a Cooper Stadium district. It was Cooper Stadium, and you drove to it and you left, and there was nothing after you left. The new model in the Arena District was to build the community around it, and we're seeing it thrive, and that is what is serving as a model for others. And so I would view it as an economic development issue rather than suppose we just called it Company XYZ is going to locate in building Q, and is that a good idea?
And they're going to bring so many jobs, and if they do...
Yes, if we can bring in 5,500 jobs, I mean, think about the debate we're having now at the governor level about losing hundreds of jobs. If we had the issue, we can bring in 5,500 jobs, how would that play in this election?
Jay, you're on the air with Professor Buser. Welcome to the show.
Hello there.
Hi.
I read Professor Buser's report, and it's well done, and has a lot of interesting alternatives, focusing on the economic development impact of the arena. I'm wondering if the numbers that were used in the economic development impact study factored in the other use for the money that would be spent in the arena in other venues. For example, if $3 million is spent inside the arena over a given period of time and the arena weren't there and the Blue Jackets weren't there, then that money would have been spent on movies, bowling alleys, restaurants, and so on. I wondered if that other potential economic impact was used in the study that was part of the basis of Professor Buser's report.
And it's a great question, and the answer is yes and no. So not explicitly. We didn't have the list of alternative projects, but what we did, we said we raised the bar very high. So if you were making a personal financial investment of $1 or $100 and you're going to get a return of 10 or 20 or 30% per year, you'd think, well, that's probably a pretty good return. That's not the standard we're using for public investment. Public dollars has to have a phenomenal rate of return. So we're saying suppose you plunk down $1 and get $5 back, something closer to that. So the reason we have that high standard is exactly your underlying concern. These dollars are precious. And I think that the public officials realize that these dollars are precious, and they are trustees over your dollars and my dollars. And they're not going to invest them for returns of 10 or 20%, precisely because of your concern.
That's all the time we have, Professor Buser. Professor Stephen Buser, he's an OSU Finance Professor Emeritus. Thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
That's the latest in the Blue Jackets saga. Join us again next time. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.